During the Great Depression of the 1930s, winds picked up the croplands from our nation's heartland and carried them away in great black clouds of suffocating dust. Where there was no croplands, there was no hope. Some say a succession of five-year farm bills that promote the industrialization of our croplands may cause a similar catastrophe. And so today we ask, can a 50-year farm bill save our nation's croplands?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned in to the 622nd edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends way down there in Port Villa who are tuned in as we stream along in the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio, with Nikki James on the boards. Hello, Nikki.
Hello.
Producer Carol Stafford.
Hello there.
And Parmley Taft.
Hello.
Folks, the first law of the food chain, at least according to me, agriculture is the foundation upon which we build all our sandcastles. No agriculture, no sandcastles. Agriculture lives on and in soil, which in total is called the land. During the Great Depression years of the 1930s, wind picked up our nation's croplands and carried them away in great suffocating clouds of dust. Those who lived under the suffocating clouds could not grow crops and could find no hope, so they let go and drifted off to find hope somewhere else. The conditions that caused land to blow away in the 1930s are being replicated, at least according to some, by a series of five-year farm bills that encourage the industrial extraction of life from the nation's croplands. But wait, there are two among us who say it is time for a change. And it's time to put nature back into agriculture with a 50-year farm bill. And so today we ask, can a 50-year farm bill save our nation's croplands? And here to help us dig for an answer, we have one of our nation's leading lights, Wendell Berry. Wendell, thank you for joining us on the Food Chain today.
Well, you're welcome.
Glad to have you
so
aboard.
Thank you.
And also looking for Wes Jackson, who hopefully will join us in a few here. Perhaps that's him calling on my cell phone, probably. Let's see. Author of 50 books...
don't think so, but go ahead.
Pretty close, 47?
I don't know.
So I was going to ask you, just as a personal, what is the difference between writing fiction and nonfiction?
Well, I'd say when you're writing nonfiction, you have a different obligation to the truth.
Mm-hmm.
You're trying to... make sense of the things you actually know. And in fiction, you realize at the outset that the things you actually know aren't enough to tell a complete story. So a complete story is an imagined whole.
Is it not the truth?
Well, truth of a different kind, a truth to the human condition, or...
Perhaps a figurative truth instead of a literal truth?
Well, I don't think we can do justice to that question.
Okay, fair enough.
In an hour.
I know. I just thought I'd have to put my toe in that pool to see what the water was like, and I bet it's really exciting. But what I really want to know is a little bit about your farm, and tell us about, for those who do not know... Wendell Berry is an author, a poet, a professor, and a Kentucky farmer. Tell us a little bit about your Kentucky farm. So
all right. Well, I haven't been a professor for quite a long time, but my farm, our Kentucky farm here, is a very marginal place, and it's mostly steep, and what isn't steep, floods. And so it's the kind of place you can learn a lot from in short order.
Uh-huh.
It's all at present, except for the vegetable garden, either in grass or trees.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure of the proportions, maybe half and half, something like that. And when our children were at home, we had a very elaborate subsistence operation here, which is not quite as elaborate as it used to be. But we still grow a substantial part of our food, take a substantial part of our fuel from the woods, and produce our meat. And we have a small commercial flock of sheep.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a pretty largely a solar-powered operation. I have a team of horses that I suppose you could call solar converters.
Pretty easily. You know, Wendell, I was raised on that kind of farm, and my grandfather had those kinds of horses. And as a matter of fact, I can remember being bucked off of one when I was a wee tyke, and if I close my eyes, I can still see myself flying through the air from the back of that horse.
Well, it's a long way to the ground.
A long way to the ground. And it was a subsistence farm with some commercial crops thrown in, but it was really, you know, the real crop, I guess, that was produced on that farm was people, children,
who
grew up and became good citizens. Well, that farm is now part of a much larger tract that is growing government-subsidized sugar beets.
Yes.
So what on earth happened to those farms, Wendell?
Well, there are lots of reasons that are involved in explaining that. But you've suggested one of them. Farmers were talked out of the subsistence economy by the experts, who told them they couldn't afford to grow their own food. And so you have now the phenomenon of people shipping their meat or milk off to market and then buying it back again at retail prices. So that was one thing. The other thing was the what I'd call the rigging of the agricultural economy that allowed large surpluses to accumulate that became a weapon in the hands of the agribusiness corporations, forcing farm prices down, which benefited the agribusiness,
mm-hmm.
the corporations. So they bought their goods cheap, manufactured, processed, marketed them, and sold them at retail. So the farmer's been stuck now for a half century or more in an economy in which they produced wholesale and bought retail. In other words, they bought their supplies on an inflated economy and sold their products on a depressed economy.
Wow.
And which is a recipe for failure.
So the government has been giving direction to farmers for, I don't know for how long, but it seems like forever to me, through a succession of five-year farm bills. And these farm bills come up, as I said, once every 5 years, and the government provides direction by spending billions and billions and hundreds of billions of dollars giving it to farmers to do one thing or another. Is that part of the direction that you're talking about?
Well, that's part of the problem. When the way you get those large surpluses is to pay subsidies without pay subsidies on production without imposing any kind of production control. So that what you do, in effect, there is supply the agribusiness people with cheap products.
Mm-hmm. So how did that affect my grandfather's farm? You know, what were the forces that forced it out of business and forced it to become a monocrop sugar beet Was it
well,
the...
you know, that would call for a detailed analysis of a farm that I don't know anything about.
Sure. But do you think the fact that the government is subsidizing sugar beets had something to do with it?
Well, if I don't know about the sugar beet economy. If the government is subsidizing sugar beet production, sure, it would have something to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
But there are other considerations. How good a living was your grandfather making from that place?
And how
old was he when he sold it? And did he have an heir who wanted to farm it? And
those are the perfect considerations, and we'll pick them up when we come back from this break. Folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here. We're talking with one of the leading lights of American agriculture, Wendell Berry. We're honored to have him aboard today, and we're honored to have you listening as well. You can participate in this radio show by picking up your phone and calling 831-479-1080 or 800-624-2665. We will be right back with Wendell Berry, and you, please do stay tuned.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of MetroFarm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. MetroFarm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. MetroFarm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. MetroFarm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of MetroFarm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
But what do you think out there? Can a 50-year farm bill save our nation's croplands? We're asking that question today of Wendell Berry, who, of course, is the Mr. Agriculture here in the United States.
Oh, wait a minute. That's an exaggeration.
There are a lot of people who would say that it's not an exaggeration. I know that for a fact. Wendell, you know, you talked a little bit about the grandparents' farm and how it depends on his age and his children and whatnot. And I look back at that and think that's probably true, because I was a teenage herbicide when I was growing up, and I hoed so many weeds that, you know, my whole goal in life was to get as far away from agriculture as I possibly could. And such was the case with my parents and their siblings on the farm. Everybody ran away and went to the city and became successful city dwellers, leaving my grandparents on the farm and with nothing for them to do but sell the farm and move on, I guess. And yet, you know, we kind of all look back on that farm with a lot of nostalgia. And I can remember my Uncle Dan cursing himself for many, many years for letting that farm go and now being without it. It's kind of like the rest of us, isn't it?
Well, you hear a lot of stories like that. I get a lot of letters expressing that kind of regret. Also a lot of letters that from sometimes people who are not very well informed, who want to get a farm.
Yes.
So,
do you think your writings have a lot to do with that?
I gather that they do. Yes.
Wendell,
I've written a lot of letters to people saying, "Don't do it.
Don't do
it unless you have a good town job and that sort of thing."
Mm-hmm. Wendell, let's go back to these five-year farm bills, and let's go further back even than that to the Great Depression. What was it that caused the loss of so much farmland? What were we doing wrong with our soil to have it be so vulnerable to the winds?
Well, we were uncovering too much ground.
Mm-hmm.
The West is the authority on this issue of perennial plants. Is he on this?
Well, we're looking for him, but we haven't been able to find him yet.
All right. Well, I'll if
you'll have to sit in for Wes Jackson today.
If Wes were here, he would say that the nature of most places is to cover the ground with perennial plants.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, what we in a lot of places would call a sod, a living carpet that absorbs the water and
holds life.
Holds the water, releases it gradually, and prevents erosion. So when you uncover vast acreages and expose those acreages to the wind, and the soil gets terribly dry over a large area for a long time, then it can blow.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you uncover even a small area and it's too steep, then it can wash away. And we're concerned about soil erosion rates.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why our version of a farm bill would encourage the phasing out of annuals, annual crops to be replaced by acreages planted to perennials for pastures, forages, and eventually perennial grain crops.
So instead of thinking short term in 5-year chunks, we begin to think in long terms of 50-year chunks of time.
Well, 50 years is an arbitrary number, but the hope was that by making a long-term program, we could distract the short-term interests, effort to control the farm legislation in the short-term interests of people instead of the land.
Mm-hmm.
There's a big critical difference between short-term finance and long-term eating.
Right.
And that's our concern.
You know, back in the roaring 20s, times were very good. And the
rain... But not for farmers.
Well, that's true. The rains fell. There was rain. There was a lot of crops. I guess I was looking at the cycle of boom and bust that we seem to be forever condemned to live in. And was that not what was going on in between the 20s and the 30s? You know, the 20s were boom times and the 30s were bust times.
Well, I'm not an economist, not an accredited authority on mm-hmm. the economy, but what causes a bust is a bubble.
Right.
And you've got, if your economy isn't founded on necessities, if it isn't conscientiously grounded upon the natural world and the land economies, if it doesn't maintain a stable relationship between money and goods, then you have these bubbles, and they bust. But farmers went into the 30s Depression out of the 20s. Depression. They were already weakened.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't, but that is officially, we don't think about nature as an economic resource. We think of it as a vacation place.
We think of it as something pretty.
And we don't, that's right, scenic. And we don't think about the land economy. I don't read economics textbooks, but I do read articles on the economy, and I have been doing it for years. And I don't remember everything I read, but I don't remember the natural sources of the economy or the land economy ever being even mentioned.
No.
We have an economy that's based on consumerism, on consumption. And that seems to be the bottom of the pyramid in the minds of these experts. And that's why they talk about economic recovery in terms of stimulating and spending. But spending isn't an economic virtue. Miserliness is not an economic virtue either. But thrift is an economic virtue. And to look upon money only as something to be spent is a little crazy. So we have to face the question whether we want the economy we've had for the last half century to recover or not. I vote against recovery. What I would like to see is this airish, bubblish, bubbling economy jacked back down to ground level, and with as little suffering to people as possible.
Do you think that that's what the bursting of this current bubble was all about? It seems like we've been going through a never-ending succession of boom and busts. The last administration or the previous one was we went through a high-tech bubble where everything bust then, and then we went through this mortgage bubble and everything busts now. And do you think that somebody's trying to tell us something?
Well, reality may be trying to speak through to us. Insanity may be trying to make itself heard. But if you have an economy that isn't grounded, that doesn't begin where it ought to begin, then there's nothing to check the bubbles. So finally you had a bubble that was being blown by people who were selling worthless stuff. They were selling at a high price things that essentially had no value, like worthless mortgages. They were even seducing people into taking out worthless mortgages that they didn't have a prayer.
Can the same be said for what we're doing to the land then?
No, I don't understand the question.
Well, I'll try to pick it up when we come back from this short break, when we talk about the economy of land and soil.
All
with
right.
Wendell Berry, and we found him, Wes Jackson.
Well, hello, Wes.
We will be right back. Do stay tuned. 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Folks, the first law of the food chain, according to me and me alone, agriculture is the foundation upon which we build all our sandcastles. No agriculture, no sandcastles. This agriculture lives on and in soil, which is in total called the land. During the Great Depression years of the 30s, winds picked up our nation's croplands and carried them away in great suffocating clouds of dust. And where there was no croplands, there was no hope. So we're looking at today's conditions and how we're living kind of on this bubble of bubble economies that has bust again. And we're looking at droughts in some parts of our lands, especially here in California, where it's bone dry. And we're wondering whether the conditions that existed in the 1930s of what we did with the soil are being replicated today, and what we can do to help it, to help that condition. And with us today, we have the dynamic duo of a sustainable agriculture, Wendell Berry and Wes Jackson. Two people who have been forever pointing a different direction for our agriculture. And so today we'll ask them if a 50-year farm bill can make a difference. And before the break, we were talking a little bit about the economy of land. And instead of looking at the economy of consumerism and cash, perhaps we should start with where all things start, the foundation of everything, soil. Wendell, you talked about the economy of soil and the economy of land. Would you give us a thumbnail? And we'll maybe have Wes pick it up from there.
Well, if Wes is there, I'll have to quit attributing all my opinions to him.
Oh, Wes, we've been talking about you behind your back.
Yeah, right.
But if you have a land-based economy, for instance, you wouldn't give food stamps instead of commodities to poor people. To give them food stamps was a great service to the agribusiness, to the food companies.
Right.
Because then they could go and buy processed foods rather than foods that you had to cook.
So who are you really subsidizing there?
Well, you're subsidizing the agribusiness. You're not subsidizing farmers. Or if you were really going to base your economy on land, or the land economy, or on nature, which is really the basis of everything, you wouldn't allow a situation to develop in which land was priced beyond the reach of of farmers. And people who've done well financially are making land unavailable to farmers who are doing poorly economically.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay. Wes, can you pick up on that? You're out to, with your Land Institute, you're out to turn American agriculture upside down or inside out? Which one?
Well, I would say we are out to, well, we've said, try to solve the 10,000-year-old problem of agriculture instead of just focusing on the problems in agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
We think that now is the time that we've got to get cracking on perennializing the landscape of that is currently devoted to the annual crops that are supplying about 70% of our calories.
Before we jump into that, may I throw a quick aside here? With respect to the five-year farm bills, are we using those farm bills to always treat the symptoms rather than the causes like we do with medicine?
Well, they hardly even treat the symptoms except the amount of money that goes into the Soil Conservation Service. The five-year farm bills are really designed to accommodate export policy, which is partly for offsetting the balance of payment deficit for the likes of foreign oil and gewgaws from other places.
Mm-hmm.
So we put it a few years ago when there were things like BCRs around back near the dinosaur age that we were trading topsoil for BCRs. Well, now we're trading topsoil for oil and lots of stuff out of China and elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. And gewgaws.
Yeah, the gewgaws. Things we didn't know we needed till we saw them.
Right, of course. So.
Yeah.
Now, you talk about perennializing. It's a hard word to say.
Yeah.
You talk about taking something that is an annual and making it a perennial.
Yeah, that's right. We are doing that. We're also domesticating some wild perennials that have great promise for food.
Mm-hmm. And the current five-year farm bill is giving you how many billions of dollars to do this?
Well, of course, the five-year farm bills devoted to export policy, there's very little in USDA budget that accommodates long-term thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't, it's kind of like jumping off of a 100-story building, you know, we're down to the 20th floor, we're doing all right so far.
And we'll do fine until we meet the ground, right?
Yeah, well, yeah.
So you're talking about doing something that, you know, kind of scratch our head. I guess we started doing when we first started cultivating plants is asking them to do extraordinary things that they probably would never have thought of doing themselves.
Well, the plants, those annual plants are doing what annual plants do. They've been the colonizing species. They arose as weeds.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the things we picked up on probably around our campfires or whatever. And so you start bringing those seeds back into your hut or your whatever, and now you're involved in the first few cuts of selection that tilts the scales toward increase in yield. So we're saying if we had done the same thing with perennials, of course you didn't need to do that because we didn't need to do that. We just kept going back every year.
Sure, we all had a lot of resources to work with.
We never had a breeding program for
right.
them. So anyway, we're just saying that we need to start perennializing the landscape, and we can do that, start that in the short run without any perennial grains ready. In fact, our vision, which we're hoping to get to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, our idea is to convert just in pasture alone. We're currently, if you take the 320 million acres, we're saying that we could There's we can get that so that 256 million acres, which are annuals, we can cut that down to 20%. Right now it's 80% in annuals and 20% in perennials, and we're talking about increasing the number of pastures, increasing perennials in the crop rotation, and so on.
Well, we're going to have to take a quick break, Wes, but when we come back, I'm going to ask you and Wendell Berry, what impact changing that annuals to perennials agriculture would have on our environment, would have on our agriculture, and would have on our ability to pay back our bank loans. Folks, this is The Food Chain. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio. We have Wendell Berry and Wes Jackson, and you, if you'd care to participate, pick up your phones and join us, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Can a 50-year farm bill save our nation's croplands? Right back. Well, sometimes we get a great notion. Wendell Berry and Wes Jackson have a great notion. Instead of thinking short-term in five-year chunks, let's look long on a 50-year chunk. And they suggest we adopt a 50-year farm bill instead of those chunky little five-year ones, and think long and think about an economy based on our soil. Wes Jackson, how would a 50-year farm bill differ from a five-year farm bill?
Well, first of all, we would use the five-year farm bills as mileposts. Just to draw a contrast, the five-year farm bills would be what David Brower used to call, or what he used to call strength through exhaustion. It's devoted to exports, commodities, subsidies, and the food programs. But our 50-year farm bill will address the end of deficit spending by protecting soil from erosion, cutting fossil fuel dependence, we think it could go to zero, eliminating toxics in the soil and water, managing nitrogen, reducing the dead zones, and restoring an agrarian way of life. There's everything going for the 50-year farm bill as far as being able to save the soil resource and develop the cultural capacity that's going to be necessary for good farming. We've said that soil is more important than oil. We've acknowledged that it's just as non-renewable as oil. And if we have technological substitutes for oil, mm-hmm. In the pipeline are already available, but there are no technological substitutes for soil.
It's kind of like draining the water from your reservoir. Once it's gone, it's gone.
Well, but you still got a watershed, and it could rain and snow. That's not a good analogy.
Okay.
Once that soil moves off the back 40 and heads toward the sea, for all practical purposes, it's gone.
Mm-hmm.
That's because water doesn't run upstream, uphill.
Yeah,
except
right.
Here in California.
Yeah, water doesn't run uphill except toward money.
Yes, that's right. Well, let me ask you this. Wendell, can agriculture borrow short and plan long?
You got to give me an example.
Well, it seems like what agriculture does is it runs down to the bank and borrows money to plant the crops. And if we change the way we treat our soil, can those two ways of doing things coexist? I mean, can we live on this cash economy and still make this transition to a long-term way of doing things?
Well, you can do it under certain conditions. If there's a stable relationship between money and goods to start with, that would help.
Mm-hmm.
But we've had this cheap food economy, and that means that everything has been sacrificed to cheapness of food. Mm-hmm. And in the long term, that's all about subtraction.
Michael Olson's third law of the food chain is that cheap food isn't.
Well, somebody has to pay for it sooner or later. And the cheap food policy has simply put the whole burden on fewer and fewer farmers.
Mm-hmm. Wes Jackson, by converting an annual agriculture to a perennial, how would that serve to rebuild our natural landscape and hold our world together?
Well,
and keep it from blowing away as it did in the 30s.
Yeah. Well, by the way, those dirty 30s, and we're here in Kansas right in the middle of where that happened.
Right.
That was highly visible. But it's important to remember that water is 1,000 times more dense than air. And water erosion is worse than soil erosion.
Mm-hmm.
They're both terrible. But, first of all, if you got a vegetative structure that is going to be there year-round, below as well as above, now you've got those perennial roots that have much more total biomass on the perennial than the annual. Those are sequestering carbon. Jerry Glover, our soil scientist here, put it this way. It's micromanagement in millimeters and minutes. And humans are not used to managing in millimeters and minutes. So we would have carbon sequestration. We would have the reduction of soil erosion beyond replacement levels, natural replacement levels. You'd be able, I think, to move agriculture away from an extractive economy to a renewable economy.
Okay, then when we take our last break here, when we come back, I'm going to ask you both the big question, which is, what can we city people do to help affect this change that you speak of in a 50-year farm bill? Folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here with the dynamic duo of American agriculture, Wendell Berry and Wes Jackson, two of our leading lights on the air with you today. And this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson, we will be right back. And we will ask the question, what can you and I do to change? Right back. Well, at one time, almost all of us lived on the land. But that was yesterday, and yesterday's gone. Today we all live in town, or almost all of us. But there are a few who still live out there in the country, Wendell Berry and Wes Jackson being two of them. And they point to our land and suggest a different way of doing things. And yet we who live in the city probably aren't too cognizant of what's going on out there in the country, because we get our food in the supermarket, and it's a bright, cheery, beautiful place full of color and selection and variety and cheap prices. So we go on with our lives and don't pay much attention, but perhaps we should. And so today we ask, what can we as city people do to help turn the nation in a different direction so that we can put some nature back into agriculture? Wendell Berry, what can we do out here, those of us who live in the city?
Well, you can keep on doing what a lot of city people already are doing. You can become critics of your own economy, your own household economy.
That's certainly easy to do these days.
And you can collaborate with the primary producers in the country to make farmers markets, community-supported agriculture farms, develop local food economies and local food processing. All that's work that has to be done. And the country people, the farmers and ranchers, are not going to be able to do it. They have to have help from city people. I think all of us understand that.
Wes Jackson?
Well, Wendell said what I was going to say. Well, one thing I think is important to keep in mind, We can't wait on some kind of a Pearl Harbor or some multiple Pearl Harbors.
Which seems to be the case these days. I mean, it's...
Well, that's the way we operate. We're doing that with climate change and so on. And so, first of all, I think that there is quite a movement out there. I've made 9 trips around the country talking to various nonprofits and farmers and so on. And there's a constituency out there. But they're just doing the work.
Mm-hmm.
Now what I think we need is from the top down for those folk to be recognized by the Secretary of Agriculture, the Secretary of Energy, John Holdren, Obama's science advisor, that there are some good examples that they're looking for some ways to spend all that money that is going to be made available. There are some ways that they can help in a creative sort of way. I wouldn't want to see too much money thrown at it. But first of all, we got to get the attention of those officials that soil and water and the cultural capacity of farmers is what's on the line.
Can we city people help by voting with our money? I mean, should we city people be giving direction to agriculture like government does with their 5-year farm bill? Shouldn't we be taking our money and spending it where it'll really make change happen?
Oh, sure. We'll see what Wendell says.
Sure.
Sure.
Yeah,
Wendell Berry, Wes Jackson, thank you both for joining us today. We're out of time, so it's such as the nature of an hour on radio. I could spend 100 million hours with both of you and just relish every second of it. Thank you so much for joining us, and thank you out there for tuning in the Food Chain. Stay tuned next week for more What's Eating What Radio.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.